Okay, well, thanks for showing up for our symposium this afternoon to start. And Laura just went through some really nice data that looked at the effectiveness of a worksite weight loss program. And I'm going to talk about the reach of a couple of different worksite weight loss programs that we've been testing in Virginia. And, you know, one of the things that I like to start these types of talks with are issues as to why it's important to be focusing on reach in addition to things like effectiveness. So, you know, one of the good examples is Laura talked earlier about the importance of using intention to treat analysis to look at data over time. And one of the problems with that type of approach occasionally is that we can end up comparing apples and oranges. So you can have an internet-based worksite weight loss program that recruits 50% of the population, and then you could have a very intensive individually targeted intervention that recruits about 5% of that population. And over time, you might get 5% attrition in that 5% of the population, and you'll use an intention to treat analysis to look at what their outcomes are. And with the other group, you might get 50% attrition. And you'd look at, and then you'd use the intention to treat and look at that over time. But when you actually looked at the absolute number of people that benefited and the effects that they achieved, those would be very different. But an intention to treat analysis wouldn't tell us about that if we weren't focusing on something called reach. So, when I talk about reach, what exactly do I mean? I apologize to my Kansas State colleagues who saw the first couple of slides at a talk I gave there last week. But when we think about reach, a lot of times, and in particular with weight loss internet interventions, is we send out, do a whole bunch of advertising. You know, we do mail outs, we get pop-up windows on the web, we get all sorts of different things, and then we have people respond to us, and we say, well, of those people that responded to us and went through all of our arduous surveys and informed consent procedure, we ended up getting 64% of those people that responded. So they report that their response rate was 64%. Where within a worksite setting, we can actually look at that in a little bit more finite way and suggest that if we were doing advertisements that we're actually reaching the entire worksite, that really our denominator should be that entire population. And so those who are exposed to the recruitment activities that we do. And so if we look at it that way, then our participation rate is 16%. And those can be quite different. And the problem within the literature right now is we have a lot of people comparing participation rates but using different denominators over time. So the other thing so there's two things that I've talked about so far. Reach is a number, the number of people that participated, and the second is the proportion of people that participated. And the third thing that I think about, and actually this comes from the REAIM framework, about reach is the representativeness of the people that participate. So let's say that in our work site, we actually had half of the folks were green and half of the folks were blue, and all the people that participated were blue, would see that we had a participation rate of about 32% in that blue group and no people in the green group, and so we wouldn't have a representative population participating. Okay. So with that little lead-in, I'm going to talk about a program that are a research study called Tailored Weight Loss, Worksite Weight Loss Programs. You know, you get such great names when you have to fit in the characters for the NIH. You know, that's the name of our study. The primary aims are to determine both the reach and effectiveness of two different internet weight loss programs. One, in fact, is a control, a low-intensity internet program. And the other one is more intensive. We are doing this as a 24-month cluster randomized control trial. We currently have 28 work sites participating, and half of them have been assigned to our active intervention, which is Incenta Health, and then half have been assigned to Live in My Way, which is our control. And one of the things that I wanted to point out here is that since we did the randomization and agreement to participate first at the worksite level, the participants or the employees within each worksite only ever knew of the existence of one program. So they didn't get to know about one program versus the other because we were a little bit worried about a disincentive of seeing something that has a lot of bells and whistles associated with it and then comparing it to what I'm getting that doesn't have as many. And so both the programs we set up to be primarily driven by automation. So there wasn't a lot of human interaction here. And if you look and start, I guess it would be on your left-hand corner there, really everything in our both interventions revolves around something we call a health spot. And it's an on-site weight station that we put within the work site that collects data and then transports that data to our data center. And the data center uses that information to send out emails and personalized support, which goes to the employees, and then they start the loop again by getting on that weigh scale. And both, as I said, both programs use the same underlying schematic. And so I'll tell you a little bit about the HealthSpot terminal, since you guys came here to hear about technologies in worksite weight loss. This particular machine has no need for any corporate manpower beyond setup. So what we will do is we'd go into the worksite, we work with the IT folks, and we get the HealthSpot either linked into their internet system, or we use an air card and just have it go through wireless telephone systems. It also allows participants to do a number of things at one time. We put it typically in a private place, although some work sites come up with innovative locations like the lunchroom where they'd like to put the weigh scale, which is kind of baffling. We don't let them do that. But it collects confidential data for the participants. And I'll show you a little bit more here, and this will kind of give you, it only takes about a minute for folks to use, but this is a larger picture of it for you. And what you can see on there, it includes a camera, a keyboard, a scale, and then the connection to the internet. And folks, they'll type in their ID number, and then they'll be asked to step on the scale. The scale will weigh them and then capture a picture of them. One of our programs includes monetary incentives, so there's kind of a double reason for the picture. One is for motivation, people can see their changes over time. The second is for us to ensure that it's actually the person who started the program that's weighing in at that moment in time. And so you can just see the interface that employees would encounter as they use the HealthSpot. And then there's the bottom one is a picture of showing the person on the scale itself, and then the report out of the weight data, and in this particular case, percent body fat, although we haven't used that data a lot. Both programs, again, we developed in a stage model, and this isn't a technical theory stage. So this is something that we did with some focus groups early on and came up with different names for the quarters of the 12-month program. Both of the programs are 12 months, and these are labels that were developed working with employees across different work sites. We also used basically the food guide pyramid as the dietary information for both programs, and also had identical exercise programs for both the intervention and control groups. And you can see that folks could start at a very modest level of physical activity and work their way up to a fairly vigorous level of activity that included vigorous cardiovascular and strength training. So this is where the distinctions come in. So all the things that I've talked about up to this point are things that are similar between the two interventions. This is our control group and Live in My Way. And they did weigh-ins once at baseline, once at 6 months, and once at 12 months as part of their program. And then they received quarterly newsletters that covered all the information around diet, exercise, barriers, and expert advice. So it you know, a fairly, I'm not sure if anyone ever used the initial health media types of interventions where you'd do a big survey and then you'd get, you know, this booklet that was about 30 pages long. And so our newsletters were actually about 25 pages long, very dense, a lot of information. And if someone followed it, they would be able to lose some weight. But we delivered that in four newsletters over the course of the 12 months. And then when we go on to the Incenta Health program, it was a little bit more intensive from a contact perspective. So rather than folks getting four emails over the course of the year related to intervention content, they got a daily email. And you can see that the daily emails, I won't go through each one of these things, but had a different focus and basically developed upon social cognitive theory and different targeted mediators there. And then there was also some modest financial incentives associated with the program. And it's a little bit different from what Laura had presented, and in fact, much more modest. If someone in this program, Laura had used that $10% weight loss was about $300 or so. Yeah, and so for ours, if someone had 10% weight loss over the course of the year, they'd get about $90. So it wasn't quite as lucrative. But you can see we tried to do it in a way that was just intuitively understandable. For every percent of your body weight loss, you got a dollar per month. So if you did 5%, you got $5 a month. Okay. Some other things that I think you need to know about the study without me going into a lot of detail over it are, first of all, that we had all employees, or we tried to get all employees to complete a brief health survey, which was similar to a health risk appraisal, We didn't want to use that term because we didn't want to turn people off from doing it. And in fact, we got about 70% participation rate across our 28 work sites in the brief health survey. And that was delivered before any employees were made aware of a weight loss program that was going to begin. And the intent of this was that it would give us an opportunity to understand the proportion of people in the work site that would be eligible for the project, but then also give us something to compare representativeness on. So we can compare the characteristics of those that completed the brief health survey to those that participated in the program itself. Okay, and then every 6 months for the 2 years, participants also recorded their weight and took a long survey that I won't get into today. Another thing that I think is important for you guys to know is, since we're looking at reach as an outcome, we did our recruitment strategies identically between the two interventions, with the exception of three slides. So we had one slide that talked about daily emails, one slide that talked about financial incentives, and one slide that talked about the website that was available for the more intensive. And that was three slides out of 50. And so the development of the significance of the issue and why people should participate and the exercise programs, all of those presentation materials were identical between the two programs. So it was really just the things that would be different would be their understanding of the frequency of emails and the incentives. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some data here. So remember, when I defined reach, the first thing I talked about was the number. And so I'm going to talk about this from the perspective of the total number of employees. So this isn't just the eligible employees. Only people with a BMI over 25 were eligible to participate. But one of the things that we've heard through our worksite partners over time is that they're interested to see how this participation rate compares to other initiatives that would be worksite wide. And so can you compare the total proportion of the worksite employees that would participate? And so you can see out of the 6,200 people that worked at the 28 worksites where we were at, 1,806 agreed to participate in the study. And so here, this is a little smaller than I thought it would be for you guys, but you can see up on the screen here that LMW is Living My Way and Incent is the Incent to Health. And in fact, the columns that are closest to the y-axis, that's the average. So you can see on average, the Living My Way number of employees per work site was about 320, and for Incent to Health, it was about 300. So the work sites were about the same size that participated that were randomly assigned to the different programs. And then this is the number of participants. And so if you look across here, again, the columns that are closest to the y-axis are the averages. And with Living My Way, we got about 55 participants per work site. And with the Incent to Health intervention, we got about 72 participants per work site. So we're already starting to see a little bit of difference in terms of just raw numbers and reach. And so we'll move then to the proportion. And when we look at proportion, the y-axis is percentage, even though we've got the decimal points there. And again, the first two columns are those that are the averages, and you can see on average the Incent to Health program recruited about 26% of the entire employee population, whereas Living My Way recruited about 17% of the entire worksite population. And these numbers were significantly different. And the other columns there are just the other worksite, all of the worksites, and the proportion of employees reached. Okay, so I'm going to move now to the last area of reach and talk a little bit about representativeness. And there's two things that I want to point out. First of all, the overall column there is us looking at the research study participants compared to the brief health survey data. And so some of the things that you can point out, let's see, is this a pointer? No, that's just a pen. Is there a pointer? The mouse? Oh, there it is. Okay, good. Yeah, so if you look over here on the overall, you can see that people that were a little bit heavier were more likely to participate. And this is comparing them to the eligible employees, so not just the overall employee population. People that had more comorbid conditions were more likely to participate. If they smoked, they were less likely to participate. If they had higher health literacy, they were more likely to participate. If they were women, as we know with weight loss programs, a lot more likely to participate. The age one's significant, but not a whole lot there. And then you can see African American, Asian employees were much less likely to participate in the overall study. And we see the same types of patterns here for education. The higher educated, the more likely they'd participate. The higher income, the more likely they'd participate. But what's interesting here is when we move over and look at just the participants that were in work sites that had the incentives-based program presented to them, and we start to see some of those disparities disappear. So all of a sudden, when they're coming into the incentive-based program, there's not differences in education and income level. So it kind of levels the playing field. So for this particular intervention, we get a more representative employee population. We still don't do great on African Americans, but you can see we do get a significant improvement over what we were doing for the entire study population. Same thing for women. Again, we're still twice as we're going to get twice as many women in the program, but it's less impactful. So, some of the take-home points from this are that, as I go on to the next slide, are that, you know, first of all, both of the programs actually recruited a sizable proportion of the employee population when you think about the degree to which we get people to participate in weight loss programs. And, you know, even if you're thinking about disease management programs or some of these other prevalent types of programmatic opportunities that those folks have, even the low-intensity intervention did pretty well with some moderate marketing of the program. And then the next thing were that, you know, of course, there's some differences between the two interventions. We're attributing that the incentives were likely one of the primary causes of reach. I don't like to say causes a whole lot, but you need to remember that the participants at the point that we're doing all this data haven't experienced either one of the programs. So they've just seen this long slide presentation that only has this three slides difference. And one of the things that's important also to note is that the monetary incentives over the course of our 6 months that we use, people are getting between $3 and $15. Those are really modest incentives to get about 50% more participants in the program. So it didn't take a lot of incentives. And then finally, that the incentives actually reduce some of the disparities that we would see typically in this type of research project. And because I'm sure there's probably some graduate students out there, if you're interested, we have a great translational research program at Virginia Tech. So, thank you.